I'm going to all together because Lucas is on her way. Can I ask for just a few minutes, which would be three minutes for the start? We are looking for a few members who are making their way here. So the assumption that you're meeting somewhere in the room, and then not some from that room. So I plead for time, at least. Thank you very much. So that way. No, don't worry. I've been waiting for you. I want to give you time to ask your questions. After I finish, you can come and take the seat. Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're waiting for Mazamba. Now he's come in, greeting everybody. I think he's comfortable. Lois, that's truly. I had to plead for a few minutes delay because I couldn't see some members in. Fortunately, the EFF came in and you came in as well. Good morning, colleagues. Good morning to the head of SIU and the unit. Good morning to the SAPS. Good morning to the Hawks. Who else is here? The media, of course. And our support staff. This morning we are convened as part of our program, which relates to the actual continuum on the aspects that relate to the interviews that we had on the ESCOM matter. Our chair is not here today because he is busy with the preparations for the laying to rest of the IFP stalwarts, the late Ubaba Inkosi Mangosuthu Buthelezi, who has passed on last weekend. He has joined a number of others whom are part of such a trail of departure, who have served this institution for time. He has been the Member of Parliament since 1994 and is going to be laid to rest, as will be informed for the date and time. Can we observe a minute of silence? Thank you very much. Well, colleagues, the day has been put aside for us to have a report on the matter that relates to the former ESCOM GCEO, whom we have had time to meet and provide clarity on areas that relate to the statements made on ESCOM performance in relation to matters of corruption at the time of his involvement as the GCEO. We know as well that he has written the book out of which he has made a number of allegations relating to his involvement, experience, and the areas of interest that have been captured in his own words. On providing answers on our areas of interest, it became clear that there is a trail that we need to follow based on the information that he has provided. And a number of people have been so far been interviewed, including the former board of ESCOM. We have had time with law enforcement agencies, and today we are meeting again as a result of such engagements. We have written a letter per our resolution for Brigadier Berger to be part of the meeting, as he has been assigned by the SAPS for some role at ESCOM at the time. We'll hear what has transpired through those correspondences up to now. I see the commissioner is here with us at the appropriate time. He will give us his presentation, which could probably cover the same in terms of our own interest. The head of Hawks is here present, whom at the time of our own engagement with interest we relied on in terms of their success in obtaining the report, so-called intelligence report. We are to hear from them as well. The SIU, we had resolved that they should follow some areas which we thought are within their purview in as far as that report and interview is concerned. They have given us a report to that effect, so they will have time as well to lead us through that presentation. So we have a full day, which is going to run from now up to about 1 o'clock, with expectation that indeed the matters that are in front of us are the matters that would assist to unearth some of the areas of interest, because we would want to run to a close of this kind of engagement and look into other things which are matters of interest for our development, inclusive of Eskom's role in guaranteeing the availability of energy for time to time. So you're all welcome. The communication which we have received from Brigadier Berger, not addressed to us, but addressed to the Speaker of Parliament, those correspondences, there's a first correspondence and the second correspondence. We'll hear what pertains, what does it carry, and how we are going to deal with such a correspondence. But before we get there, I think it's proper that we start with the report from the SIU. Over to you, Advocate, and welcome. Thank you. I'm fine.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of Congress. I also thank my colleagues, the National Commissioner of the South African Political and the head of the Director of Private Crime Investigation, and my colleague, Dr. Rita. Honourable Chair, we appreciate the opportunity to speak and present FOPA. Following the last meeting we had, where we indicated that we were in position of what has been referred to as the intelligence report, we obtained that. That report, we went through it, and today we are reporting to FOPA on what we have found. After reading the report, the recommendations, and what we view as the next steps, and collaboration between ourselves and the DPCI and SAPS in general. Honourable Chair, as you indicated, we sent the report. We will go direct to flight number, starting with the proclamation. The opening flight, really, for SIUSA functions, which the committee is well familiar with. thought we would give just a background for the work that we continue to do at the SIU at ESCOM, the investigation that is still continuing, and the focus area under proclamation R112/2013, the focus areas and identity areas that are of concern to the committee and to both members of the public. The procurement of coal has really proved to be a problem area. At ESCOM, the ESCOM themselves, when they presented to the committee before, they indicated that the quality of coal that was delivered is very substandard and other related irregular findings relating to the procurement and transportation of coal. There's also issues with the procurement of diesel, which is also a very, very key procurement area for ESCOM. Well, we also look at the appointment of and payment of McKinsey, Trillium, and Regina, and these are the areas that where now we find a link to what the Zondo Commission has investigated and came out with findings. For these companies, you know, are involved in various state institutions, and they have been found wanting in similar manner. We found that the activities are also in Transnet, are also in SAA. So that gives a picture that was painted by the Zondo Commission in terms of the role that they played in this concept called state. We also looked at the maladministration in the affairs of ESCOM and the non-performance of service providers in relation to various power stations, including the UP power station in Kusile and in Gula. We also looked at the high voltage transmission projects at Midupi, Kusile and in Gula. We also looked at the various areas of conflict of interest, which was reported before to the committee, that there's really endemic conflict of interest of employees either failing to declare their interest in other businesses, doing business with ESCOM, and that we have said serves as a breeding ground for the maladministration, malpractice, and corruption that we are seeing at ESCOM. The next one is the proclamation R3 of 2020. Also looking at the contracting and procurement of cloud computing services and software licenses from the company called SAP. We also looked at engineering and project management consulting services in respect of a contract relating to Majuba Power Station and Malta Power Station. The next slide, just for the record, is proclamation R97 of 2022. This is the one that was issued last year after we have received further allegations or found further irregularities relating to other power stations, and we then proposed the president to amend the proclamation, and it was accordingly amended. The date of all the investigations contemplated in the previous proclamation R11 of 2018 were extended from January 2003 to December 2022. So the investigation will now continue and cover that period. In terms of the amended proclamation, we will also look at contracting for or procurement of goods, works, and services by ESCOM at Kusile, Midupi, Kendal, Malta, Juba, Arnold, Tutuka, and Kuat Lake power stations. So the power stations are expanded in terms of the scope of the investigation. We will also look at that was okay at the time of ESCOM situation in megawatt in terms of the irregularities that were committed there. There's also another contract, information technology now. This is the one relating to the company called Oracle. And there's also now a mandate to investigate fuel oil supply contract. This is also another big area where ESCOM is really losing money and some of the corruption happening in that area. We thought to give this background. We know the focus today is really around the report that we read, but this serves really as a background. So, given the investigations that we've done thus far, we thought it appropriate as well just to give the key outcomes which were covered in the presentation before. But just a summary of the key outcomes is that up to today, we've got civil matters before the court. Some will be going to the special tribunal. by the way, with your permission, and really apologies that all of the members of SIU in the room have appeared before, but I need to introduce the one who really never attended with us, but is familiar to this to this house, the advocate Manara, sitting at the back. He is the chief legal counsel appointed at SIU. So he started from the 1st of August. So all the civil litigation matters will now be instituted under his guidance. We are really pleased to have him on board. The value of the contract in respect of which all these matters are before courts, you see the staggering value of all those contracts that we have found is 7.9 billion of the contracts that are at court. And of course, we institute this civil proceeding with the purpose of setting aside this contract and seeking to recover the money that ESCOM may have lost. And that recovery is ordered in terms of what the court called just an equitable order, which results in the recovery. Some of them were already reported to the committee. The actual recovery is 1.5 billion, but today there are those contracts that I referred to above that have been set aside, and the recovery will now follow following the set aside of the contract. The value of the contract that has been set aside today is 10.2 billion. So, following the setting aside of the contract, then the process follows of the recovery. The disciplinary, or matters referred for disciplinary action by ESCOM, is quite a high number, which we reported before, and this includes those employees who failed to declare or conduct business with ESCOM, and that's the number as it stands is about 5,617, and we work together with ESCOM to ensure that the disciplinary hearings are implemented. Honorable Chair, honorable members, as part of our investigations, of course, the law requires us when we find evidence pointing to criminal activities, which we have found, and we'll really come back to that, then we refer that evidence to LPA and, of course, continue to work with the DPCI to ensure that those who are found who have committed crimes at ESCOM are really arrested. Honorable members, in relation to the referrals for criminal action and the investigations are continuing, and I'm sure my colleagues from the South African Police will report, but we were pleased this morning to see the highlights from the media that energy experts have loaded the arrest of 9 people at the Kusile power station for coal theft and fraud. And this is after 8 weight bridge operators employed by Eskom and Rotec Industries and a coal truck driver were arrested last Thursday. This is really fitting and really just indicating that the investigations, the criminal investigations are bearing fruit, and we really want to see that consequence management carried through, conviction and sentence. There's also administrative referrals that we do in various instances. We could refer to other services like FAR, blacklisting of entities and individual directors. Of course, there's also other referrals to CIDB, just to mention a few. Today, we've prepared an interim report to the president. Before I go into now the report that we've gone through, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we have said it before that there is a clear organized nature of crime and corruption at being committed at Eskom, and the investigation is ongoing. Some of these arrests are a clear indication of that. So the modus operandi that so far we have seen as evidence present is that there has been quite an endemic collusion between Eskom officials and private companies and private individuals, and that will continue, of course, to be investigated. We contribute to that. There has been a clear manipulation of business processes, including wage bridges. I had the opportunity, just so that we can look at various sources, including reading the book written by the former CEO. He clearly also articulates that the manipulation of wage bridges is really one of the serious problems in Africa. And the wage bridge really is there to ensure that delivery is accurately captured and that the delivery is accurately delivered. But the manipulation of this wage bridge ends up with Eskom either not getting delivery at all and losing a lot of capital. There are fictitious orders and fictitious deliveries that we have come across, as we indicated, poor quality of coal or no coal delivered at all. There's a theft of fuel which will now, based on the amended proclamation, we will continue to investigate. The level of maladministration and malpractice really needs pointing out and being addressed. Now that really being the background and findings, we go now into the report that the committee, we reported to the committee that we received before, and the allegations which were previously made by the group CEO, former group CEO of Eskom. As we indicate that the allegations made by the former CEO of Eskom, we stated and we remember that those allegations were never reported to SIU. After the publication of the interview by the DCEO, as we indicated before, we made several contacts to no avail. We continuously engaged with officials from Eskom in order to scope the new methods requiring further investigation. That is during our investigation. So those allegations, we became first aware of their existence and the existence of the so-called intelligence report on the morning before the former DCEO was due to appear at Eskom, and that was the 26th of April 23. We immediately requested a copy of the report, which today is common cause that we have received and went through it. We are of the view that the GCEO was under obligation to report those allegations, and he failed to do so. Next slide is as part of our stakeholder management and engagement, as part of our investigation, we do engage on an ongoing basis with ESCOM management, in particular the CEO, and we provided monthly reports on the status of the investigation. Now, as part of our continuous engagement with ESCOM, one of the methods that we regularly discuss were the new areas requiring investigation. And the GCEO, or former GCEO himself, has referred new methods to us for investigation, and those became even part of the amendment of the proclamation. So we are of the view really that in that context there was great opportunity for him to have reported this method to us. If we proceed, we have gone through the report that we received from the fibers company, as you said. So we have confirmed that the private investigation company that we filed the report in June was George Fibers Forensic and Risk Company. We did, of course, request the copy, and we were given the copy by the company. The report is quite bulky, and it took us quite a while to go through it. Now, the information consisted of the following aspects, as we read it. There were 348 agent reports, 30 monthly analysis reports, 10 pre-read reports, and of course there's some diagrams that were ready, that we considered. Now, upon assessment of this report, we have divided the information into about 54 broad themes that feature across the report. All 54 themes contain allegations of a criminal nature, which we have indicated that although we do not really actively investigate, they are investigated by the GPTR, of course, we work closely with them. Now, of the 54 themes, 22 themes contain allegations that well, they do fall within the mandate of the SIU. The next slide. The SIU conducted interviews and collected information from Mr. George Fiber himself, and we also went to interview the team, went to interview Ms. Busisiwe Mabuso from the BLSA. And both parties have really cooperated with SIU and provided information that we have requested. Now, we also obtained a copy of the contract between the company, the private investigation company, and the BLSA, which was concluded on the 28th of January 2022. And the scope of the contract really is briefly captured as follows. The service provider shall provide the following services: a specialized risk and vulnerability assessment to be provided by the 30th of June 2022, focused on the identification of imminent, immediate, and future threats or risk factors that have the potential to disrupt and or to destabilize the day-to-day power supply to South African households, commerce, and industry. We have confirmed that there are no other parties to this contract, including that ESCOM is not a party to the contract, which is really, really an anomaly for us, that it's a contract that investigated, amongst others, the affairs of ESCOM, but ESCOM is not a party to this contract, and we will come back to that. The contract we indicated was a period of 6 months, ending the 30th of June 2023, with an option to be extended. We have learned that the BLSA did not extend this contract, The value of the contract we have established was about 17.1 million, excluding that. A closeout report was issued in terms of our discovery to BLFA in August of 2023. Next slide. Now, according to Mr. Fiber, the private individuals and businesses funded the investigation beyond 30th June of 2022. The presentation circulated maybe within 2023, but corrected 30 June 2022. So that was the end of the contract, but some private funders were involved, funded the investigation beyond that end period. However, Mr. Fiber did not disclose the private funders and claimed confidentiality. Mr. Fiber informed the SIU investigating team that as far as he knew, the former CEO approached private funders, and we have seen that this is confirmed also in his book, where he says he went out and raised funds for this investigation. He's very elaborate on the chapters in this book that deals with this area in terms of how he went about raising funds. The investigation team interviewed Ms. Mabuso of BLSA, informed the SIU that she did not know the identity of the private funders. However, she was aware that the former GCEO was approaching private funders. Through the engagement with ESCOM and Mr. Fibers, we established that the Fibers company is not on the vendor of ESCOM. The SIU has also independently verified it. Of course, and that is a point to note, through the engagement with the ESCOM in this regard, we have established that the ESCOM did not approve this investigation. So the accounting authority of being the ESCOM board did not investigate, authorize the investigation. It's a very important governance issue and really points to a measure of maladministration, and that's our view. As far as investigations were done by this private company into the affairs of ESCOM, it was unauthorized, and we come back to that. And we distinguish between the unauthorized nature of the investigation and the usefulness or otherwise of the content of the investigation report. And we'll come back to that part. When we appeared at COPA, we raised a few questions, and we now have offered some of the responses to the questions that we have raised, which really requires answers from the investigation that we conducted. The issue of the authorization of the investigation, which we raised before, who authorized the appointment of the private investigating company that the CEO referred to, we have since established now that it was appointed by BLSA, as far as the contract shows, and that we find that is also indicated in the book of the former CEO. Now, we indicated in the question, why would ESCOM appoint private investigation company when the allegations could have been referred to the SIU or to the DPCI or State Security Agency, in as far as it needed to gather intelligence? We could not really find why would the CEO to law enforcement aid. And to that extent, the intent was really for him to assist with the investigation of the maladministration and the corruption, but we are of the view that the manner in which he went about was not consistent with his office, and without informing the board, the SIU, DPCI, SAPS, and the executive authority, this on the governance side really is maladministration on his part. Despite, as he indicates in his book, despite the good intent and so on. And again, that goes on to the usefulness of the report, which we will come back to. The other question was whether the report of the private investigating company was handed to ESCOM, or to the accounting authority, the common court now, and the board reported before that they never received the report. The acting CEO has since approached FIU to request a copy of the report. We will still revert to him in that regard. If the report was presented to the accounting authority, well, at the time we were saying we granted access to the report, but it's common cause now that the accounting authority never received the report. How was the private investigating company paid by ESCOM? Our investigation to date indicates, and even in his report, that ESCOM did not pay for the investigation. A portion of the funds came from BLSA, and the balance came from unknown private funds. If they wanted to know if the investigation report was paid by third parties, then who are the third parties? It is common cause now that yes, it was paid by third parties, but the third parties were not disclosed in full. Whether the payment by ESCOM to a private investigating company was budgeted, of course at this stage is common cause ESCOM did not pay. Whether the outcome of the private investigating company investigation is acted upon, if so, how is it acted upon and by whom? And this again, as I indicate, it hinges on the one part being the maladministration, not informing the board, not acting really as expected by the office of the CEO. The other really question is the usefulness or otherwise of the report. So we are aware at this stage, having read through the report, and we will come back to that, most of the other aspects of the report are already being acted upon by SIU and by the GPCR. We in some of the contracts which we will indicate. Now, at that time when we appeared, there were indications that the report could have been leaked. There are indications that this report could have been leaked from the inside of the investigating team. But of course, that needs to be verified. But this is really our indication of now. Of course, it was leaked even before it was handed to anyone. So it could only have been if that's the inferential view, the inference to be drawn. Now, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, having gone through the report, we have come to some preliminary findings. And as we say, these findings are preliminary and will be confirmed once the SIU has obtained either further investigation or guidance, legal counsel, and these findings are not limited to the ones recorded. We have said it is our view that the former CEO had no authorization from the accounting authority to undertake this nature of investigating among others the affairs of ESCOM. So that's the authorization part, as expected, of the CEO. That we can tick. clearly that he was not authorized. It appears that the investigation was not authorized, and as unauthorized as it is, we are saying, what would the evidential status of its functions be? The report at the same as intelligence that requires further investigation, and to that extent, reading again in his book, of course we still need to be verified through focused investigation. He stated in so many ways that he was really gathering intelligence, and which is the aspect which we questioned. It does appear, even from reading his book, that he says he has distrust of the law enforcement agencies. But in his office, as a CEO, it was really incumbent for him to raise that distrust appropriately to the appropriate level, just so that his distrust is attended to. But he went on and did and commissioned a parallel investigation, parallel to the one conducted by the law enforcement agencies. And that is really the part which we are saying he really should have dealt with differently. And we'll come back to some of our views there. But as we say, the investigation was unauthorized, especially in view of the party to the contract. The party to the contract is the forensic company and BLSA. And of course, the scope that we quoted of the investigation, it doesn't mention AFCON. Right? But fundamentally, it's also investigated the affairs of AFCON. It does say investigating the day-to-day availability of power and all of that. So the extent to which it investigated and what information related to AFCON to us that's problematic. Of course, we could not establish the procurement that was followed, but we all know now that it was a private arrangement. Consideration should be given to holding the DCEO to account. And this is an interesting question that we have, and it becomes a legal question as he's no longer employed by ESCOM. And in this regard, we said we will consider the options that are available together with the board and advise accordingly. We have read since that the former DCEO has been appointed in one of the universities in the USA. Should the nature of the action required warrant it, it would be warranted that we reach out, and that is based on the legal assessment of the action required. We will have to formally reach out to wherever he is so that action can be taken. Any action against the investigating company is again a question which we will provide the answer to. Because we say they should know, or alternatively, the industry ought to have known that they cannot conduct investigation in a state institution without the necessary authority. We will consider the nature of the action to be recommended, and again here in conjunction with the board, and advise accordingly. Now, again, the action relating to BLSA, as we similarly say, they should also know an investigation cannot be conducted in the same institution without the authority. Other ESCOM employees, which we have found that, or which are said to have cooperated with this unauthorized investigation and provided information and support to the investigation, will be identified and any appropriate action would be required. We have provided what we view as the way forward. We are aware that our colleagues in the DPCI also have a report. We've communicated with the DPCI, and there is a joint effort as we move forward to ensure that there is a coordinated and collaborated investigation to bring out the actions that are supported by evidence in that regard. We have already held discussions with the DPCI Serious Corruption Cases Office, as well as the provincial head of DPCI in Mpumalanga, with a view to establishing joint operations. The strategy to combine efforts, as we say, really that is just our view that it shouldn't be seen as a direction by the DFFR report, but discussions were already underway between the financial sector and the law enforcement agencies. We have, as SIU, engaged with the TFIC as well, and can confirm that the technical operational team has been established. This team will operate under the provisions of the South African Anti-Money Laundering Task Force, the acronym is SAMLIS, which is a private-public partnership initiative to fight money laundering. And the first meeting was held on the 6th of September 2023, and the first cases have been prioritized and investigations have commenced. So as the Honourable Committee can see that where the collaboration with private sector and private sector companies is within a specified collaboration framework with the state and state institutions and law enforcement agencies. Not in a manner in which it was done, because we believe that it's really inconsistent with the collaboration that's required. Now the idea of the team as well was well received, and major banks have already come on board to collaborate, and we are seeing the results of that. As we indicated towards the end of the presentation now, honorable members, matters under investigation by the SIU linked to what has been reported in this private report relates to all those power stations that are listed: Kusile, Midubi, Mata, Kendall, Arnold, Kutuka, Juba, and Kulte. There's a mention of these power stations in the context of the criminal investigations that were done by this private company, and we all know, well, at least between us and the law enforcement agencies, we know that investigations are underway in this regard, and hence the rationale for quoting the arrest that we've done on Thursday. We will continue to investigate. We have found that these companies were awarded to about, these contracts were awarded to seven companies, some linked to each other, with common access, and that the companies are active across power stations. That is an indication of the collusion that we have seen. And as the report says, the cartel nature of the criminal enterprise that is attendant at ESCOM. And at this stage, we know that part has been investigated. There was a question raised previously in terms of names being referred to or not referred to in the report, including a question that was raised whether there are, I think the way it was put, whether there are politicians. Senior politicians, thank you, Honourable. The question was whether there were senior politicians mentioned and so on. Mm-hmm. Right? In going through the report, there are names mentioned in the report, but of course at this stage we would like to allow the investigation to unfold before we undergo a legal risk of mentioning the names before the investigation is thoroughly completed and evidence thoroughly collected, and there is a finding and appropriately processed. And that part, the DPCI, I'm sure, in conjunction, in cooperation with us, will ultimately conclude the investigation. And where appropriate, the name, based on the legal basis, will be made known. As part of the next steps, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member, we identified, SIU identified 50 additional entities mentioned in this report. Reports that are vendors to ESCOM, information relating to contracts awarded to these entities have been requested. Once the information has been requested and received, the SIU will develop a database wherein certain patterns will emerge relating to this, the cartel data which will input into the criminal investigation and the collusion and the continuous prejudice to ESCOM. And the following information will form part of the data report: what goods or services are being procured, and the location of the power stations, at what price are the goods services being procured, what procurement strategies being used, emergency, single source, quotation or open tender, who are the ESCOM employees involved, who are the suppliers and when they were registered as vendors, who are the common actors in the company, and ESCOM. So we will seek to terminate existing contracts unlawfully awarded and seek to recover the money that ESCOM lost. The SIU will consider the litigation on closed out contracts and seek just an equitable remedy from the company's concerned. As we said, the SIU will work in collaboration with the NCA, DPCI, and we add AFU to ensure that the referrals that are done where evidence points to criminal action, we would refer, and that the real-time and swift action is taken without compromising the integrity of the evidence gathered. We did raise the question as we're going through this report that we found that it was unauthorized in that sense, in the strict legal sense. But again, the question also is the usefulness of the report and the content thereof. The report cannot be ignored because it has information that can point to investigations and areas that require investigation. That is clear. So, from where we sit, the unauthorized nature of it has to be dealt with separately, and the usefulness of the report in as far as enhancing or enabling the investigation has to be treated differently. And we have seen that it does contain information that can be useful. Honourable Chair, we haven't really said much about this last item, and the team has really looked at that, but we will put it here so that we can confess to the Honourable Committee that we are investigating this fidelity contract. I think its value was reported as about 500 million. This contract is the subject of the investigation. At this stage, we'd like to really confirm that we have commenced with the investigation into this contract, and we are of the view that the investigation will not be limited to what we call FSC, which is the Fidelity and Security Contract, and therefore the SIU is casting its net wider than just this one contract. So we've requested information related to this contract, and we've commenced with the analysis. So we will also investigate and interview those people that have been identified, and there's a person called Advocate Pile that we will also engage with. So the investigation is ongoing. We will report to the Honourable Committee on the on the findings that we make on this contract as well. That is the end of our presentation. We once more appreciate the opportunity, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Members. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Advocate, for your detailed report and letters which have been referred to the SIU on our last meeting that we had on the matter. It's clear through that report that there are a number of things that need to be followed through to authenticate some elements which are critical for the establishment of either criminality and matters which ought to be answered around governance-related matters. Nevertheless, you're working together with DPCI, which I would give to General Libya for his part of the element of the report. Over to you, General.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to the Honorable Members, the colleagues, the National Commissioner, the head of the SIU, and all the other parties present. From the DPCI, I'm accompanied by the component head of Serious Commercial Crime, which is Major General Maginyan sitting on my left. Chairperson, we have got, we prepared a presentation, which I think that they will be showing it. Just as a point of departure, I need to be indicating that the DPCI is currently investigating 105 matters that are related to ESCOM. So these investigations are not necessarily emanating from the report that we are dealing with. We have already started the investigation way back. So in terms of the presentation based on the request that was submitted to us, starting with the table of content, it will touch on the introduction, slide background, the structure of the intelligence report, which means that they did the 5-month report, the criminal allegations, the assessment documentation, and the multidisciplinary approach that we follow, and we will conclude with a way forward. As a matter of introduction, the purpose of this presentation is to appraise the Standing Committee on Public Accounts on the intelligence report commissioned by the former Chief Executive Officer on ESCOM on the alleged sabotage. As a matter of background, the intelligence report obtained from the George Files report forensic investigation were obtained. These reports were received by the national head of the DPCI, who had then handed them to the provincial head of the DPCI in Mpumalanga. So that report was received after we have came here in May, the day that we have indicated that there was also a report that purported to be an attempt to report in terms of Section 84 by the former GCDO. So after leaving this committee, when we went back, we engaged with General Fibers, who provided us with the copy of the report. That is the first time that we obtained this. And it is this report that we then on the 22nd of June handed over the DPCR in Mpumalanga. We also directed that they engage with the funds, which they have done that. And based on this report, the provincial head obviously assigned the analyst who is a part of our priority crime management center. Those are the ones who analyze all of these reports, so that we can be informed precisely what is contained, that it can be seen at the date on which that was done on the 28th of June. The aim of engagement between the DPCI in Mpumalanga and General Group 5 was to clarify certain issues that are raised in this report. The report itself have got 348 individual intelligence reports. So looking at this, one can basically say that we had to go through 1,150 pages of this report to analyze, so that we package them in such a way that it makes sense. From this individual intelligence report, 23 liars and reports were received, and where all these individual intelligence reports were grouped and clustered together. That is because they every day they would be submitting a different report. We had to consolidate this so that it makes sense, or precisely what is that which is contained in the report. So those were the work that were being done, and it was further observed that certain role players in this liaison report were implicated in multiple individual reports. So this report, they prepare one, and then the next time they prepare, they will also link in some of this. So one has to do analysis of all those reports to try to make sense how do they relate to each other. I'll then move to the overall criminal allegations. The reports include various criminal activities. We just need some of those. They include the dimensions which affect two state-owned entities, the ESCOM. That is, the first one is sabotage to ESCOM infrastructure. So with regard to sabotage, sabotage by utilizing unemployed foreigners and or co-workers to sabotage or damage infrastructure, putting pressure on ESCOM to utilize the emergency to fix the problem at a significant cost. The emergency procurement processes will be utilized to obtain contracts. And ESCOM, obviously facing national emergency, may have no choice but to pay the excessive fees charged to address the emergencies. So those were part of what has been alleged to be the sabotage. The sabotage by contractors in charge of maintenance who deliberately omitted basic maintenance with the aim to cause damage to infrastructure, so that their services for providing additional maintenance can be required. As a result, it will benefit the contractors in charge of the maintenance. So those are part of the sabotage that are emanating, observed from the reports. The next aspect is procurement fraud and corruption. Intelligence report indicated that most companies that were identified belong to subjects of the identified groupings, which were awarded contracts without following the contract. The correct procurement processes. So those are the here include the fact of coal associated with criminal practices. Multiple groups involved in illegal coal yards were identified in the intelligence report. Specific groups operating in and around power station in Mpumalanga were in this report identified. So there were also prominent and influential persons that were mentioned. As the SIU have indicated, there are names that have been mentioned in the reports, and we have analyzed them and seen. But what we need is evidence to link them to specific crimes, which is what needs to be happening. Part of what is happening is that there will be the intimidation and the threats of violence towards ESCOM members. Some of the extensive and life-threatening intimidation that are being raised by employees. Part of what we do is to look at the relationship between several individuals that are alleged to be involved, so that if it forms a syndicate, then we investigate in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. It is indicated in the report that they are operating as a syndicate, but we need the elements to prove that, so that if one has to go to court, one will be able to show, to prove beyond reasonable doubt that indeed this individual committed offences in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. In the next slide is the intelligence report of the documentation. This intelligence report are of similar in structure. The length is obviously different. There are those that have got 2 pages. There are those that are long. And you just have to read them. It would appear that on a daily basis one would be compiling a report and depositing. So there are also diagrams that have been drawn as to who is linked with whom. But again, this is not supported by evidence. So it's a sort of information which is information thrown. Intelligence that you need evidence to show that X is linked with Y in doing what. So we have got those diagrams which we are working on. As to the assessment of this report, although the allegations towards entities, groupings and individuals are not yet proved, the gathered information needs to be corroborated. That is this corroboration that we are looking for. There is the potential that indeed some crimes may have been committed which need to be proved, corroborated by way of affidavit and the like, in such a manner that we will be able to present something that the National Prosecuting Authority can be able to make a decision. So some of these things will require affidavits that must be disposed of by the people inside ESCOM who have got the know-how. Some of these things have happened. We are working in that direction. From the intelligence report, 10 groupings were identified by the DPCI in Mpumalanga. From the identified groupings, several subjects of interest associated to entities were identified. As I would say, that the way in which you structure and group these individuals, because you are basing this on information, we may come with different numbers, but this is what the DPCI, when they assess, in Mpumalanga, they said that there appears to be this number of groupings that are operating together. So they are continuing to analyze the information. So there is a need to collate and collect certain information that will assist in ensuring that the information at hand makes sense. In the next slide, we'll talk about how we normally deal with this type of matters. To handle this type of information, you have to engage what we call multidisciplinary approach. This is a process that is supported by Section 17, capital letter F, of the SAPS Act, that requires that we work in collaboration with other entities, not only in the DPCR, in other environments, inclusive of the SIU, as the head has indicated. So we are working on this, and on the 27th of June, the Special Investigation Unit consulted with the provincial head as the SIU shall have indicated. So there is that collaboration that is taking place. And indeed, there is always a willingness to be working together, which we do. Also in the National Priority Plan Operational Committee, we work together. So working together is a given. And I think that whatever they pick up as a criminal matters will ultimately refer to the NPA and us, so that we get what is needed to deal with criminal aspects while they are dealing with a civil portion of the same activities. With regards to the way forward, we are formalizing the multidisciplinary approach, which I said is supported by Section 17F of the Police Act. While we are working on this, you may find that at the beginning we do not have to create this, but you will first gather the same information before you put up a fully fledged team. So the team usually consists of various disciplines, and you can expand this to crime intelligence, the revenue service, the financial intelligence center, the ESCOM itself, with regard to certain key role players who must depose for affidavit from within, as well as the National Prosecuting Authority will be guiding as to what is that which is needed for a decision to be made. So that speaks to what we can say with regard to the FIBAS report, or the report that we have analyzed. I think that the honorable members will recall previously when we indicated in this forum that there is also a report that was made by somebody else regarding the GCEO, who should have reported the matter to us. So that particular aspect still remains, that it is in that report that we should have obtained certain information which did not come out. So there is that portion, and the portion where one is supposed to be a complainant giving us this information. So basically that is how we treat all the information that one could be both a person who must explain and also a person who must actually become a witness. So that, I think, basically conclude the matter of the FIBAS report as we shall have received and analyzed it. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, General Bia, for the report. DPCI chapter of this sort of engagement. from the SAPS, is there anything that you would, as per reference, would want to deal with, collaborate, or explain, so that we can have a discussion on this area?
That ends, honorable chairperson and honorable members. SARPS, as you are aware, we have been involved in the investigation in the area of ESCOM, especially in the Malachian area. Most of the information that General Lear is briefing me about, the team that is working in the ESCOM team that's working under General Jacobs, both the REAC team and the security team, are dealing with some of these cases. And they are being investigated in collaboration with the DPCR. So I letter that under investigation, there has been quite a number of arrests recently. There were some arrests also. And the investigation is ongoing. And we are foreseeing we will be having a takedown in the near future of more than 20 people that released to the cartel. Stay just really there for now. And we can report after we have done the takedown. Regarding the virus report, we also, through General Jacobs, referred the matter to the Inspector General of Intelligence on the legalities of the activities as alluded earlier, whether was this intelligence, private intelligence investigation or this. But most of the information that is there, which can have with me on the team that is investigating ESCOM, most of it, especially for whole cartels and so on, are well aware of it. They are investigating it, and also some of the matters that relate to some contractors are under investigation. So, I think it's safe, honorable chair, members, maybe to leave it there. There is a lot that is under investigation in this area, including what has been alleged over media and radio and reading books. The situation is not as rosy as might be stipulated in whatever format the interview or books. The teams, I think, as we go on in investigating, will be able to track most of those cases. With regard to the elections of the go on with the better
matter. Now leave the better matter for now. Yeah. Colleagues, that's the report. Thanks to the various institutions that have handled the matter with reference, and it's clear that this has invoked some inertia in as far as a legal matters are concerned, and it entails some form of thorough working through. I've sent this little note to advocate after I presented the report, because I had a slight problem that should probably clarify for me. The note was saying, is the report in brackets, an intelligence report in brackets, or is in brackets ESCOM intelligence report. So I sought clarity for him so that we can have a firm understanding as to what are we dealing with. As I was listening to General Libya, General Libya attempted to five us report and then B report, this and that, so that we can know what we are dealing with quite appropriately. That question is very critical for us because we should take it from what the report says. How is the report coined? So, advocate came back and pulled off the brackets intelligence on ESCOM report. That's what I've received. Intelligence on ESCOM report. So it tells us that the writer of the report has provided the title on the report as intelligence on ESCOM report. Can we just have the understanding on that? General Libya?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I think that I also tried to understand this from the author of the document. The first thing that one is asking himself or herself is if a child is writing in his document, in a book, and they happen to write on top, secret, is that document classified? Is the person who's classifying that document having the authority to classify? If a document is sort of classified by somebody who does not have the competency to classify, is it classified? So I thought that I leave this to the intelligence community so that they can deal with that. I was assured that because it has been raised there, which we have also done it at NICO, that look at that. We focus on investigation, but look at what this document is insinuating to be, whether it is what it suggests to be or is just information. From us, anyway, we have been looking at the information which is contained, leaving that one to be clarified by the relevant environment. Thanks, Chairman.
Thank you very much, General Advocate.
Well, thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I want to pick up on what General Libya indicated. And again, just to make reference, because when we looked at the report and looked at various sources, as I said, we also had the book that the group, the former group CEO wrote. And it is very clear that the intention was to gather intelligence, well, among us, in their view, or in his view, to gather intelligence on escort activities and criminal, you know, enterprise that's been conducted there. But you recall, Honorable Chair, that it was in this committee meeting where the former chair of ESCOM, Professor Malakhapuru Mahor, also indicated that the GCEO, and I may not be quoting verbatim, but he indicated that the GCEO indicated that there is a need to gather intelligence and they not to call it third way, but they in a way allow him to proceed and that intelligence as he sought to. So it is clear that the intent is there, but as my colleague indicated, the response to the note, Honorable Chair, was clearly that, informed by the fact that the intent was to gather intelligence on ECHO. And it looks like this in their scope and the intent of commissioning this investigation. In fact, the GCO in his book says when he left, the gathering of intelligence was not complete. Was not completed. And he says that is the legacy that he wanted to leave. In gathering intelligence so that, you know, it could assist, you know, with the investigation and gathering of information to deal with the criminality there. So we said, as we presented, that the report, the commissioning of the report itself, from a corporate governance, from a corporate perspective, from Telkom, Eskom as a corporate, they have not authorized that. That is the government aspect. Because he went on his own, he did not inform the board. It seems like at the time the chair of the board was aware, but there is no official minutes or records of the authorization of that kind of investigation. So, from where we are, and just agreeing with my colleague, the head of the DPCI, and as I presented initially, that it may be unauthorized, but the usefulness of the information has to be treated differently. So we're using it as a source of information that could enable or even assist the investigation. And indeed we are doing it, because there are indications of matters that require investigation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate and General. Over to you, colleagues. Let me get it to you. By the way, we are here. To deliberate on this matter, Honourable. Is there any other hand? That's it. Honorable Van Mierlen. Van Mierlen.
Thank you, Chair. Well, that's really where we started. I mean, it really is a bit like wading through the letters trying to make progress with the situation. I think the first thing to really look at is, so there is a investigation / report, whatever it is we want to call it, that appears to be unauthorized. But I think what the real takeaway there is given what we have seen and heard with regards to Eskom, with the chronic issues of corruption, the allegations and the indications of cartels, the issues with coal, everything which has been swirling around this particular state entity now for years, not to mention the utter crisis the country finds itself in because of this, because of the inability of Eskom to actually perform its duty and its mandate. I think the big takeaway is that it is not exactly unexpected that one potentially has the GCO who particularly considered the conversations that have been had with Minister Gordhan, felt the need to try to have some kind of investigation into what was going on to then be able to use as a signpost for the policing and law enforcement agencies whose job it is to actually investigate, to put together the cases, to make them trial ready, and then to bring the evidence to court. It might be so that it was potentially having governance issues, that is so, but to, and I think I've said this before, to shoot the messenger and ignore what the messenger is saying is not a responsible way of investigating a state entity that, quite frankly, is crippling the country at this point. Now, I think what Abdul Matuli has said is true. It is something that indicates where to look. Its usefulness can then be harnessed by the hawk, like that. And previously, we have been very concerned that there appears to be so little movement. So I'm very, very glad to hear that something is happening. I think, however, one does have to bring up the issue of the current board. The current chair, certainly the last time we met, appeared rather disengaged from fighting with what was actually going on within the organisation. I'm not going to comment further on his potential extraneous issues. And I also sincerely hope, Chair, that we do touch on the Rita Berger matter, because I think that there are great concerns there about what has and has not been conveyed accurately or not to this Committee of Parliament, and I think that that also opens a whole number of questions. So essentially, what I wanted to know at this particular point is there or are there genuine attempts to move forward with these investigations? I realise that there might be reluctance in some quarters to rely on the Fibers report, but is there at least an attempt to follow the signposts, to see what is happening, and to actually attempt to genuinely unpack what is happening at ESCOM? I mean, it's good and well to blame unemployed foreigners. This committee itself has found it difficult enough to sometimes access ESCOM installations. I'm not really sure how unemployed foreigners are going to do this. So I really would like to have some kind of confirmation from the whole concept in particular that indeed there are investigations being made, that evidence is being looked at or looked for, and that one can hopefully see progress in this matter at a slightly faster rate than we have seen over the last year and a half. But quite frankly, most of these meetings have been people denying what other people have been saying with no genuine forward movement. And instead, we've just been engaging in a roundabout argument about semantics. And that certainly doesn't take us any further. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Haddeme.
Thank you, Chair. S108 of 96, Chair. Chapter 11. Section 209 is as follows. Establishment and control of intelligence services. Any intelligence service other than any intelligence division of Defence Force or Police Service may be established only by the President as the head of the national executive and only in terms of national legislation. The President, as the head of national executive, must appoint a woman or a man as the head of each intelligence service established in terms of subsection 1 and must either assume political responsibility for the control and direction of any of those services or designate a member of the cabinet to assume that responsibility. In responding to your question that relates to intelligence, let me therefore take this responsibility and requested SCOPA to the matter on behalf, of course, of the political president. And welcome the arrests that have been made thus far. We truly and sincerely appreciate and congratulate the dedication and hard work both from the Department Advocates, Dr. Advocate General Rubia, and the Advocate Mutibi, and the National Commissioner. Will keep up the good work. If you were not doing your work, you were competing in a competition, you deserve a standing ovation for great work that has conducted. But you are doing your work as such. I must have resisted the temptation for applauding the fish for swimming. Mm-hmm. But credit must be given where credit is due. We truly appreciate. Continue arresting more and leave no stone unturned in dealing with this as combat. Whether it's senior politicians, backbenchers like us, anyone who is involved must face the full might of the law and do not be threatened or intimidated by anyone in executing the mandate. There are few areas of concern arising from the report, and I don't want to repeat the presentation, but it's quite concerning to note that George Fathers is not a registered vendor of escort, and to date they are not willing to disclose the fund. We don't know for what reason and to what extent is that fund related to escort. Very concerning. We are also informed that it appears that the person or company responsible or the entity responsible is PLSA, because the report was given to them. We don't know to what extent those agencies access ESCOM information and method used. To date, we are still wondering to what extent have they accessed such information. You have mentioned Advocate in your report that out of 54, there are 32 matters that fall squarely within your purview and mandate. However, you did not mention the other 32 where to be for. I was listening with keen interest to hear from Dr. Advocate General whether or not the remainder will be pursued by your officer or the National Police Commission. So can you please clarify and share with us the remainder of the 54 where do they fall? It's 32 men, yeah. Honorable Chair, we now know that the former co-chief executive was not authorized by ESCOM to conduct the so-called intelligence report. Now, the principles of legality say one cannot exercise power of a own and function not assigned to him or her. Now, what I want to get to know and understand, having understood that there was no authority given to the former chief executive, did he have powers to do so in terms of his judicial responsibility and general roles and responsibilities assigned to him? He might not have been granted authority by the accounting authority, but did he, one way or the other, have such powers? indeed. If indeed we did not have such house, what then should be the next step to be pursued? And have you exhausted that aspect in terms of his comments? We all can appreciate the fact that some of the findings contained in the report does warrant to be pursued further and to be dealt with until a verdict or a sanction is found in relation to what is contained. We also note the fact that there was no authority given to conduct such. So we are indeed going to separate those two issues so that we do not disregard the report in its entirety, but we deal with the matters separately and ensure that we do justice into issues raised and the conduct and the modus operandi that was employed in arriving at this particular matter. There are several contracts, I assume.
Magpi. Mamijar. Hold it there. Hold it there. It looks like you've got a load of questions. Yeah, I think it would be prudent that we allow already two members have indulged in questioning. We might conflate in terms of responses. So let's allow the team to give responses. If Honorable von Minen still wants to ask a question, would be welcome to do so, and you'll continue with your questions. Thank you. No, no, we're going to the team to answer the questions and to respond. Yeah. Advocate?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Honourable von Minen, we agree that even though it appears to be unauthorized, the report and content thereof cannot be ignored. And as we indicated, that we are indeed following through all the information that was contained, and in particular the criminal aspects the general will confirm, will be investigated accordingly. I'll just request my colleague to respond to the exact number in terms of contract 54 or 32 and so on. The lead investigator is here, just so that I don't miss any number. I'm going to ask him, Mr. Governor, to respond to this 54 versus the balance and so on. So Mr. Governor, please, if you can just clarify to the committee around which ones fell within our scope and which ones referred to the DPCI.
Thank you, Deputy Chair. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. What I can confirm, and we should be mindful that in the SIU digital analysis, we based it on teams. We understand that the DPCI has done similar analysis. Same reports, they have a different way of identifying the areas. So we must not restrict the areas in terms of whether it's 54 or whether it's 10 as the DPCI. But we've identified there are 54 broad themes in general to all these reports. All 54 themes as elements of criminality, which we have subsequently referred to the DPCI. Within that 54, 44, we also find an overlap of 22 matters that falls within the SIU mandate. So it's not 54 and 22, it is 54 in total. From there, there's an overlap of 22 matters that we could be involved in. And that is the number that we have. But these numbers, depending on how the investigation goes and progresses and what we find, will definitely change. It may reduce, it may increase, and we have to be guided by the evidence and see where that takes us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General. To want to pick up point on Oh, you're still referring to add something else?
Yes.
Okay.
Just to conclude on some of the questions that come up.
Okay.
My colleague for coming. The issue around the, as I indicated, authorization versus the usefulness of the report, I think it's very a critical distinction to make, and both of them will recognize. So, correct, we agree, Honorable Kadebe, that one cannot perform powers that are not assigned. So, in this regard, having engaged with ESCOM, we have gathered that the accounting authority has not authorized the commissioning of this report. So, the team will continue now to go into details in terms of the contract of employment and therefore drill down in terms of what could he have done this, you know, in terms of the contract of employment. And they will drill down into those details. But from the accounting authority perspective, it's clear that he wasn't authorized. So we'll look at that. Although we're still going to do that, and if one assumes that, in a very unlikely event, that when we drill down, we find that he could do that. But, you know, if he could do that, then he would probably have contracted on behalf of ESCOM. But the contract is between private entity to investigate into the affairs of the state institution. That is what we find fundamentally problematic. It's really setting a concerning precedent that you would have private entities interacting themselves, getting into contract themselves to investigate into state institutions. That is an unacceptable scenario, if I want to put it that way. We would recommend that however good intentions were to assist with the investigations and ensure that it unraveled the cartel nature of the criminality, but there are governance frameworks within which this has to be done. Honorable Hadley has just read from the, you know, the supreme legislation of the country, and my colleague General Ria and General Masemola have indicated that that aspect would probably the Inspector General would be best placed, you know, to give the final advice to us as investigators so that we can formulate an appropriate finding relating to the intelligence gathering nature of this exercise. It is very, very important that, you know, we create a base and knowledge and awareness that matters have to be done in accordance with the rule of law. It's very, very important. You can't have a CEO of a state institution. I don't think even in a corporate that you could just, you know, go and outside of the rule of law applicable to the corporate go and do something else. However good intention that may be, that's where, as SIU in investigating the maladministration part, we have gone to this extent, because we would like to assist in the improvement of the administration. While we don't lose sight of the need to intensify the effort to assist with the criminal investigation within the support, but of course within the rule of law and policy and framework applicable to the state and to the state institutions. What action would be taken, assuming that maybe did not have the power, but the pathway we will still assess and get counsel, and then we will then return an appropriate recommendation. Thank you.
Okay. General.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I think that the first one by Madam Peden, we just need to also confirm that we are serious and genuine about our investigation of this matter. So information, wherever we receive it, we always pursue it. Some of the information that we pursue come from the suspect themselves. So wherever the information comes, we pursue that. So we are serious and genuine about this. I have assigned a kennel, it's a very senior officer, to analyze this information. Very, very experienced. And so that is how serious we are, and we have got a team that is actually looking at this. With regard to the second question of Honorable Adam, I think that I have noted the Honorable Member reading original text from the Constitution as it was done in 1996. Obviously, there is a 2005 that modified the citation process. But otherwise, that is what we highlighted. We said the relevant institutions that look into this so that you properly advise, because there is a different interpretation of what that particular portion is saying. Who is it instructing? Whether it is an instruction to the government departments, or it is an instruction to everybody, regardless of who. So that's why we have requested the relevant environment to assist us on that aspect. So thank you very much for your service.
Thank you very much. Honourable Fomin, are you okay to the response?
Thank you. I was hoping to hear from staff as well in this regard, because I think that is certainly something where we've had concerns in the past. And the whole issue of this report, to just ensure that staff is also actually moving forward, is not just the report in this regard.
Okay. Commissioner?
Thanks, Honourable Chair, members. On the question whether is there any attempt to follow up on these matters, the answer is yes. We have arrested people in the past. We reported to this committee, and today I'm reporting that we will be arresting more than 20 in the near future of those people that are involved, which want to get more people. But we think we are on the right track on the future. I was briefed by the end of the report. Most of those cases, the team led by General Jacobs was already busy with them. Those are the matters that would lead to the storage of coal in illegal places and so on, or the coal cartels. We are already busy with them. So it's not new matters, it's matters that we are already busy with and we are moving forward with them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Honorable Hadebe.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your guidance and direction in this matter. I was saying, Chair, and just to illustrate the point of us having to not neglect the conduct of the former Chief Executive. there are contracts that were subsequently awarded as a result of the so-called intent tender report, and the manner in which those contracts were awarded under the pretense of emergency contracts. It does appear to me, Chair, that an emergency will be created for certain individuals to benefit. And I would love to see an investigation into all these emergency contracts as to what was the circumstances surrounding such emergency and how those emergency contracts were awarded. We need to get into the bottom of these emergency contracts over and above Fidelity and others, because the issue of sabotaging ESCOM and then on the same hand the government didn't probably go on the other side and become the service provider to benefit. We need to get to the bottom of this. So I would like to implore and request the law enforcement agent to look into the matter and with specific reference and focus on the current matter at hand, because there is a smoke and we cannot ignore what we have seen before us. The other matter that I will also touch base on it is the way forward in relation to SCOPA, whether or not we have done enough in terms of dealing with this matter. Should we now allow the relevant authorities, the law enforcement agency, to pursue this matter further? But let me, I'll get to that as a conclusion. Chair, to say indeed, work has been done, particularly as it relates to slide 18, but we see the contract values before court as it relates to civil litigation, the sum of 7.9 billion, that's a sign and indication that what is happening. We see that the contract that was set aside to the value of 10.2 billion, clearly that's a demonstration of what is happening in this regard. So there shouldn't be any imagination or picture painted that nothing has been done in this regard as it pertains to these allegations. We see before us the figures and the administrative referrals, the number of those is 85. NPA referrals, 160. So the key work is done. And I was saying, Chair, this meeting should provide the way forward in relation to this matter. Have we dealt with all parties concerned that we enable this matter to be concluded and all those capable of stealing the taxpayer's money should be brought to book? Do we still have work to be done? Have we done enough? According to the presentation of today, it seeks to suggest that SCOPA has dealt with this matter thoroughly. And SIU,
Marges, whichever little thing we are leveling down, sugar wheel. Don't get into the way forward. Let's allow other members to, they have questions and all that stuff, comments, and then we're going to get into that point. Yeah, with a proposition on way forward. I will allow you to do that.
No, it's fine, Chair.
Yeah, no,
I was.
I used to sit in that seat asking questions. I'm so itchy this day, right? You know, but nevertheless, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Are you true?
No, I will come with the way forward when we are ready to deal with the way forward. I'm interested, Chair, in the conduct of the I'm really interested. time concept, and we need a discrepancy. The SIU will ask the question. We need to move with speed so that we cannot set wrong precedent. That money talks. Those who have money, they can do as they please. They can go into any state entity, throw money, call friends, come and investigate, and arrive at a particular conclusion. Already, if you see the trend of those that are living as home, and where do they go afterwards? The type of jobs that they land themselves in, and what they benefit out of being a public servant, other they produce books, they selling books, through utilizing the state-owned entity resources, time, instead of focusing on what they were employed to do. Others now are employed for the future. Surely they're using what they gather and ask them to benefit themselves. Not only the former computer version, even the group chief or operating officer. So we need to pursue this. It can't be business as usual when private sector is involved in corruption. It can't be termed corruption when the public sector is sheer corruption. Then the private sector will be totally different to the corruption. We must call corruption for what it is. Yeah. So I really want us to have a view on how to the LSA. It now explains the conduct of Madam in one of our oversights. It's like the military comes. That outburst was unwarranted. Now neither for shocking the caught up with her. We now know what informed that behavior. They were unleashing millions to do what they were not authorized or don't have power to do. They are not running this country. Let me pause there, Chair, before
Before we
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Hadebe. I think the point there, which ought to be followed probably a comment, which the SRU has referred to in terms of the report, is the PLC conduct, whether is there anything to be followed there. In fact, you have referred to that point in the report. You want to affirm it?
So the question, can we do something to force them to disclose the other funds?
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Hadebe. As we indicated, that both the conduct of the GCEO former and the VLSA we'll look at it, we'll consider it first, and then advise on having also had the comment in terms of what recommendations would be made in view of the current legal framework, what is it that is done, so really pass the test, of having acted within the rule of law, that will receive further detailed intention, and it will have the appropriate recommendation which will bring to this comment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Noble Hadebe?
The question is, can we do something to force them to disclose how we empower them, which legal group can take reliance on in ensuring that we force them to disclose the other fund, and they need to explain the extent of access to public
investigators who went to interview the member of PSA. It was as a result of the cooperation that they have offered. So in further investigation in this area, we will then consider the legal structures that the SIU has in terms of subpoenaing them for further interview, and we will consider any legal considerations in terms of further disclosures of the funds. With respect to, I understand the question is probably two-pronged. Can ask law enforcement or SIU in particular to something we will consider and pursue now the interviews further in terms of the legislation. The other problem is can go back to some, in which case we will leave it to the Honorable Committee to them. But we will come. We will come with our recommendations and the report of what we have done and what are the legal basis on which we can request BNSA to disclose the finance. Thank you.
Honorable Lewis, are you? No, right, next, third one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a bit distressing in a way. You know, Advocate Mativi, I've said many times that I'm a fan of you and your SIU's work and the success that you have. And I remain there. I repent you. But I'm somewhat taken aback about the vigor with which one is pursuing the messenger in this case and not the substance. We have in South Africa state-owned entities, every single one of them, I think, has got problems, but 99% of them are a disgrace and a collapse, and have had CEOs, whether group or otherwise, who have acted in a way that I believe is not in terms of the rule of law. And yet I don't see the same vigor from those of you sitting on that side to follow up on those people who acted deliberately and consciously in a way that was not in terms of the rule of law and not in the interest of South Africa. Here we have a GCEO who may well have been delinquent. I'm not in a position to determine whether he was delinquent or not. But what I am in a position to determine is that he was attempting to deal with the best interests of the company he was heading up. I'm yet to be convinced that that was not his motivation. But here we have this great vigor to pursue him and not the others. Why are we not pursuing the others in the same way? Why? Is it because they have connections? Advocate Mativi and you, General Beer, have said, you don't want to say who the names are there. Well, I'm going to ask you, is the name of David Mungosa in that report? Can I have an answer, please? Let me start with you, Advocate Mativi, because you have been, I hold you in high esteem. I haven't changed that opinion, so please don't let me give you that impression. Is that name in that report?
Advocate, though, in answering that question, you are here because we asked you to be here. You are doing what you are doing because we insisted that you must do it. So we must not persecute you by doing what we asked you to do. So in answering such questions, it should not be as if you are at liberty at this point to venture into any other matter. The matter in front of you is this matter, and therefore we don't want generality into dealing with it. So I think in dealing with the question, you must probably focus on that point. No. Okay, advocate. Adam. Oh, stop it. Advocate.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Lee, thank you for the discussion and for the kind words. We are certainly not pursuing the provisional method that you indicate, more than pursuing the aspect. When we presented, we indicated that we looked at the authority to commission the investigation, but also looked at the usefulness of the report. And we did indicate that we cannot ignore the content of the report. That is, I think, very, very important to note. And we will pursue it with rigor. We have indicated the joint operations that we have with the DPCI, and we will continue to do so. Just like we have done before. There are those reports that we have presented before SCOPA where members of the previous board, members including the executive authority, members of senior management of ESCO, are being pursued rigorously in court, civil court, and in the criminal court. This is no different. When we say we will pursue an investigation without fear, favor, or prejudice, we really, really mean it. And that we shall not differentiate based on any measure. We did indicate that the good intent that the former DCO may have had in doing this does not preclude us looking at the governance part, so that we are able to make recommendations that would inform and guide state institutions going forward. So we can confirm and really, really assure the Honorable Committee and Honorable Lee that we will consider and pursue the substance of the report with rigor and ensure that we bring out the results and those who are found in the wrong, irrespective, and I agree with Honorable Hadar, irrespective of what station in life you hold, irrespective of which name appears in the report, we will pursue that. Based on that, I indicated that there are names being mentioned in the report, but we've got legal constraints. With respect that we would like to mention the name at the time where evidence allows us to do so, and within the constraints and the framework of the law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, TV. The question was specific about the name, and you declined to answer that, and I accept that. But my question was specifically about other state-owned entities. Let's take CASA, for instance. CASA has been completely denuded as a result of what I believe was not following the rule of law of previous boards and CEOs. Are you acting against the previous CEO of Strata? If so, we need to know about it. That really is my point. And it's not just focused on you. General Avia and the Commissioner as well, need to understand that South Africans are not focusing on individuals, they're focusing on the rape of the state, the complete rape of the state by people who go away and get see no consequences. That is the thing. And so I'm pleased to say that you've arrested 7 people. But it's really quite small. And again, I don't seem to be denigrating the word good work. It is. And I'll get to you now, General Avia. But the fact is that who's in jail? Are they there for 20, 30 years? And why isn't there a plethora of these people in jail? What is it that's holding us back here? And so given your record, now I'm directing it to you, but the same question I'll direct to General Avia, is given your good record of success, and given the latest directives to cut back on expenditure, my concern is that you are constrained and have been all along by the lack of resources, both people and other forms of resources. Is that not an element of why we're not seeing more people being arrested rather than just 7? If we as a state were to make you stronger resource-wise, surely you could do a lot more and we could satisfy South Africans that we really are changing and putting the bad guys in jail.
Just hold it there. Honorable, yes. Honorable Mazambane. They are in the cadet. Why? You see, no, I'm just trying to prevail on. You know, our agenda item is not what you are getting into. We had Brasa here the other day. We had Transnet the other day. We had to be fair to the officers here, it is the point in hand, the point that we have received deliberations on is Eskom, and let's deal with Eskom, let's not go anywhere else. You are free to ask your question, any question, as it relates to a such instance. I want to plead with you, Mazamba.
Thank you, Honorable Samia, for your guidance. But the question is an Eskom question. The question is that after all this time of Eskom, would the SIU have made more progress, potentially, had the resources been available?
Okay. Fine. SIU?
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Lee. Without really deviating further from the question at hand, we would appreciate the opportunity, Honorable Chair, Honorable Lee, to return and present on track in detail so that we can demonstrate that there has been focused attention on that institution and who has been identified and held to account. On the issue of resources, I think we are on record as saying we have identified really that on SIU, if I give just an indication that we have seen quite an increase in the proclamations that are being proclaimed. At last count, we have seen more than 100% increase, which is quite substantial. And that is increasing in the face of other ongoing investigations, including the Eskom investigation. So, and there are allegations still coming through. We've seen an amendment of the proclamation to Eskom. So yes, indeed, we continue
to ensure that we present our case for federal resources. And yes, if resources are increased, we would do more and be able to produce the results even more. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, sorry.
No, no. Continue.
Thank you. And African TV. I certainly will do my best to ensure that agencies such as yours, the Hawks, the NPA, I'm not so sure about the South African Police Services, and have my juries out on that one, get better resourced. Because I really do believe that you are under-resourced. So, General Abia, you know, I have, despite our sparring from time to time, starting in 2018, I think, early 2018, about the slow progress of law investigations, and I'm talking again of sign-off, where Marcus Eustace Law runs free after some nearly six years. The sixth anniversary is coming up in December 2023. So I don't know that I really want to ask this question, Mr. Chairman, because I think the answer from Advocate Matipi applies equally to the Hawks in terms of we could do more if we had more resources. But perhaps you want to just confirm that, General, because it's self-evident, I think, but I'd love to hear you say we could do more if we had more resources.
General?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and I think that's why I needed to also touch on the other two questions that were raised, which we did not respond to. Firstly, I would have loved clarity as to the messenger that might be pursued, because there is a report, someone who compiled the report, and there is someone who should have reported. So it is not very much clear as to whether the one who was obliged to report could be seen as a messenger, or the one who had compiled the report, who is the messenger. Otherwise, generally, what we do is we don't pursue any individual. We look at the crime. And it can be seen from the case of Kabudi and us, that's how we have arrested in Eskom involving 745 million rand. And that matter is ready. If Mike Lomas, who is now sitting in the UK, can come back and come and join us in the dock, then we can see that matter progressing. So at this stage, it seems that things are moving slowly, but there are other people elsewhere who are delaying this. You read it from another country in the UK, and then it's challenging all of the processes in court to exhaust, to avoid coming back, to come and join us who are now in the dock. These matters are complicated. That's why the X times take time. In these specific matters, there are 426 statements that have been filed. It is the work that the people have done. And the challenge is 95 counts in one matter. So we normally talk about one matter, but when you open, that matter is voluminous. The second question was the naming. The question as to whether certain names come in the report. And I think that the author did not mention in the public arena as to who are listed in the report. And from the DPCI, I think the practice has always been that we mention when we charge, not at the time of the investigation. That's why even when we talk about style of, I normally prefer to talk of style of not an individual who has not been charged, Obviously, it is not for that matter that we are dealing with today of China, but there are other countries that are also blaming us, that we need evidence from those countries. And some of the countries obviously are proceeding, but we need information from those countries to come. Otherwise, we will be only prosecuting a certain portion, and we need some of the counts that are supposed to be included. The last question of the resources, I think that we have been vocal on this point of the resources. We are currently sitting at 52% of the capacity. So obviously we are building on this. And then I think it becomes apparent that the volume of work that we have, which is more than 22,000 cases, require more hands. So when you have got that number of dockets on hand, it means that the pace of finalization of this matter may need a little bit more time than if you were for more hands. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Resources are constrained in the country, and largely because of the bailout of the Eskom and all these other things, and malfeasance all over the place. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure how we go forward, because Rule 168, I'm becoming a big nut every now.
You're on way forward now. You are catching into way forward now. Hold it there.
It provides privilege for us as members, but it equally provides privilege for the people appearing before committee. And so, therefore, it's my opinion, and I'm going to have to take legal advice on this, but unless you want to.
On the way forward, eh?
No, it's not the way forward.
Okay. I think let's accept what has been the standing rule from their side. NPA and everyone involved in terms of investigations. Allow them to finish whatever they do, and when the time allows, there would be at a stage where they would pronounce the names involved on a matter. Even the court of law, up until people appear at the courts, there's no way that you would name those individuals. So let's allow that kind of a process. It's fair, because you'd name people in an allegation which is not proved, and you damage individuals, and I think let's allow fairness into such kind of a standing practice. I want to plead with the committee around such. At the right time, definitely would know and insist to know.
Thank you for your rulings, Chairman. And I don't accept the substance of it, but I have to accept your reading.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I want to get back to you, but just allow
just clarify on, I think, Privilege and Immunity Act. My understanding checked from that aspect. If a person appears for the common, that person for him or her to be protected before the start of the meeting, you must take an oath of affirmation or whatever you say you are. So if you have not taken that, then you have to have it.
Out of order. I've ruled on the matter. We go to Honorable Makaba. Honorable Makaba.
Thank you very much. But I just wanted to make a comment on the rule that I understand just based on the rule. But I think on this matter that is registered by the member, they would need a legal opinion because there's two forms of this thing. There's an issue of us in the scope of having a jurisdiction to get the information that we need. And from the legal side, they have their legal opinion in terms of not disclosing the names before they have been charged. So I think we need a legal opinion on this matter. I hear that you've made a ruling on it, but I think we should take that into consideration. Because I think we should then separate for which one overrides the other in this matter. And then my second question, Chairperson, firstly I just want to comment the committee. Is the department on the recovery of the 1.577 billion that's very progressive in terms of the matter of the case. And then my second question, Chairperson, is on the issue of the HOP report on page 7, where they are mentioning the issue of intimidation and the threat and the violence on the ESCO members, where it's fair to mention that they also extensive and life-threatening intimidation that has been raised towards the ESCO employees. So my question is that as part of the investigation, I want to know if there are any measures in place to make sure that these people are protected, the ESCO employees who are being life-threatening. We all know, keeping this role, that there's a lot of cases other than this case whereby whistleblowers have been affiliated to destroy evidence. So that's my first question. And then the last question is on the slide 13 on the issue of the 85 entities that have been taken to administration in terms of the growth of stars and blacklisting. I wonder if there is a list of those names and if they can be also made public. Chair, I think I'll end there because the other two questions have been mentioned has been responded to the issue of the 32 cases that were not in the jurisdiction of the SRB. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can we start with Genera?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Regarding the witnesses as to whether there is a protection of those that have been intimidated and the threat made to them. We generally take this on a case-by-case basis. It may also have appeared in the media not so long where somebody else has been indicating that there are these threats and the like. And we engage each individual, each witness, and even those that came before the media, we engage them. We explain what how the system is working, and those that are prepared are actually taken into the program. I think
think that the individual that may also have come in the media in the recent past, be engaged and offered. Unfortunately, the people do not always come back and inform the public through the media that this is what has transpired. I was actually offered to be taken into the system for the purpose of protecting. So we take it on case by case basis. So in terms of the report, as indicated in the presentation, is whatever we extracted from the FIVA's report that there are this type of threats. But whenever the individual witness requires that, we take that into consideration.
Thank you, General Advocate.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Member. With regard to the companies that have been referred, we just didn't detail them because the focus today was on the fiber support, but otherwise we can as a team compile that list and in conjunction with National Trade and SARS and then refer it to the
Thank you very much. Do you have any further questions? Satisfied?
I have another question.
Okay.
Last question, Chair, but it also speaks on the issue of the name that will not be released because of legal constraints.
Projected fully.
I want to know is there is four people that have been having allegations of having corrupted as common 4 million. Can't you have a list of those names published?
I'll try to look for it. A fighter. No, not yet. I think you're getting back to what we dealt with. Until there's finality on those areas, then we are going to be preferred with the detail, including names. I think that's what we've heard from both the SIU and the general on the matter. We are going to move towards way forward. But Honourable Jukas, you have your hand up.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair, and thank you also for the work that you have done so far. It's a little more and the responses. I just have maybe one or two clarities. Chair, in the report of the, or the presentation of the SIU on page, on the scope of the contract, in your meeting with filers, who was the report made for when they finalized? Because ESCOM don't authorize the investigation. So who was the report made for when they are finalized? And then the disciplinary referrals, it's the 5,617. Are all of those employees still in the employment of ESCOM? And what was the challenges of SIU for the engagement with ESCOM? Then to the hawks on page 8, just clarity on the individuals are not proof yet, the allegations are not proof yet. So you still gather the intelligence needs to be corroborated as the potential to investigate. With not proof yet, it means that there is no affidavit attached in the final report, or is my understanding correct? And then all of us, or we are asking for the name in the report, and or the name in the report. But I think why is it that we can't ask why it's so difficult for us to, why is it such a secret if it is a noble act from the side of the GCO? That secret funders, who are the funders? I don't think it's a question for you, but I just want to also ask it in the open, because since we deal with this ESCOM thing, I was asking, why is it a secret? Because if it was noble, why is it a secret? Thank you, Chair.
Advocate, and then thereafter it will be the general.
Well, thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Directors. In our presentation, we did indicate that the parties to the contract were VLSA and the private company, and the report was submitted to VLSA. So it does appear that the report was meant for VLSA. With regard to the referral for disciplinary action, more than 5,000, I just asked my colleague to see if we can pull out the previous report that would indicate the pages of how many have been acted upon and how many are still ongoing. In few minutes, if we are able to pull out that, we can give the status. But otherwise, the charges range from failure to disclose interest, doing business with the state without escort, without appropriate permission, and so on. So that's the bulk of the charges, and we are aware that ESCOM has started taking action against most of those officials. But we'll see if we can get the details. So my colleague, if you have them here, Mr. Lukhati, you can please provide. Otherwise, we can provide that later to the public. Thank you.
Okay. General?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members. From the DPCI, indeed, when we say that the matters could not be proved at this stage, could not be corroborated, there are no affidavits attached. It's only the information. So what needs to be happening is that to corroborate, you need something where somebody can be tested. Which is usually a form of an affidavit in the report. No, it is not nothing is attached. Some two pages, some have got 12 pages, but it's just a written notes. Thank you.
On the are you fine?
Maybe just a layman question. So how legitimate is the report then? If there are just notes in the report and not necessarily affidavits. I'm asking of not knowing. Maybe, looking at the Dompra. But yeah.
Yeah. She's saying as a layman, that's a question.
Thank you. As we should have indicated, I'll answer in a layman, not a jurist. I think that this is information that is written on a page. And then we follow to see if the content of the information that is written on this page can be believed. So that, I think, is the way in which I can explain in general terms. It's not an affidavit where somebody taking oath that what you see here is under oath, I swear to the content. Thanks.
So that's why you're pursuing them. To ascertain.
Yes.
That's it. Honorable Bengo?
Thank you, Chair. On the
issues of criminal allegations. You just indicate about the multiple group involved in the legal call yard that you identified. You also indicate the specific groups operating in and out of the station in Umalanga that we identified, and you never say anything about the arrest. So I just wanted to get clear on that. And also, I just wanted to know how long were you investigating this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. General.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. This presentation is based on the report that we have indicated, the FIVAS report. So it's an assessment and analysis of what is contained in that. So where do you specifically link the arrest with this report? So the arrest that we were talking about, also the number of cases that we are handling, is not necessarily coming out of this report, is what we have been handling. So the arrests are not directly emanating from this report. This arrest is what we have been dealing with. As an example, the Kabuli matter that I'm talking about, the investigation started in 2017, and then the arrest started done in 2020. So they are matters that we have been handling, which unfortunately some find expression in this report. So the investigation comes way back, and this report that we are talking about, as I indicated, 2023, so it's a recent report, but the activities themselves shall have been happening before the report itself is compiled. So I think that is how I can respond to the issue of the arrest and the time frame of the investigation. So the report itself, as I have indicated, was only given to the team in Mpumalanga in June this year. So, but the matters that we are talking about, we have been handling them before this report was brought to our attention. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Zwul.
Thank you very much, Chair, to all protocol officers. We will be more than pleased as the committee to see the finalization of this report as soon as possible. Why I'm saying that, that is because it was done in the front of the people. People, they're asking that how was the conclusion, where is the conclusion of what the director has said. I think that whatever you do, advocate, we are pleading to you, assist us on this. It's very important. It's very, very important.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zwul. Do you have any comment, Advocate?
And that we will ensure that
the turnaround time and the speed of the investigation is such that, you know, we're able to deal with the substance of the report and the information in there, so that we can be able to pronounce publicly what the outcome of the investigation are. Chair, if you allow us on the floor, I think the question around the emergency contract that Honorable Haber mentioned, we can confirm that we're not only dealing with a security contract, we are also going to look at other emergency contracts that we're considering. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Advocate. We are getting into the way forward as a proposal. Honorable Hadebe, Honorable Lias wanted to speak on the way forward. Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Do you think so?
I think so.
Okay. If you think so, the Brigadier matter has been hanging for a while. I'm sure we have received copies of some correspondence which has been forwarded to the Speaker recently and some time ago with the intention of an indication that Brigadier Berger is not too prepared to come to the committee. The latest one, those correspondences are not to the committee, that to the Speaker. The Speaker has copied the committee. And the latest one is referring to the fact that the authority that he could probably be prepared to listen to is on the security cluster related committees, and the preference is with a joint standing committee on intelligence. So in highlighting such, he as well makes reference to the fact that on the first instance, when he came, couldn't come to the committee, he told the commissioner that he's not coming, not what the commissioner told us. So Brigadier Berger has shown his own intent in as far as such correspondences are concerned. So it's us as committee to decide as to what we want to do in terms of his intent. Yeah, so you might be correct in saying when we frame the way forward, we might as well want to frame the way forward in terms of Brigadier Becker as well. Honourable Famina.
Thank you very much. Couple of things. One, I think it is a very unfortunate slide towards trying to push everything into the joint cell intelligence. It's something that this committee has discussed at length before. A certain political party, in fact, removed a member of this committee who was not following that particular party's caucus line on the subject. I think it's something we really need to go against. But that isn't really about issues at this point. With Brigadier Berger and the letter that was sent to the Speaker, he makes certain allegations about the police commissioner's statements to this committee in June. If what he says is in fact factual, it would appear that there was a certain fragility with the truth when it came to informing the committee as to why he was not here. If that is the case, it is a very serious matter. You will know obviously from precedent that the misleading of Parliament is something that can potentially carry quite serious sanctions. And I think it's something that certainly the way forward we need to look at. It is something that we really have to be sure was conveyed to us properly, the information was conveyed to us properly in June or not, as the case might be. And I certainly think it's something that we can't ignore, because I think the potential, particularly given the very convoluted issues that we're seeing with ESCOM, is something we need to be sure that all the agencies and the parties to those agencies investigating ESCOM are also in fact performing their mandate and informing the committee accordingly when we ask for information, that information is conveyed to us accurately.
Thank you. The hands which were raised before such, if we were to make reference to the Brigadier Berger matter, the correspondence we have copied by the recipient of the letter, which is the speaker in this instance, we might want to say it is her prerogative to respond to the correspondence. But it has been forwarded to us as a correct term. Forwarded to us for us to reflect on it. If we'd want to do anything as a result, why can't we then refer the copied correspondence to the legal fraternity in the institution to outline what sort of options are available, looking into the entirety of the contents which are carried into the correspondence. Then at that time, I will be able advise appropriately to take appropriate action. So it is probably inclusive of both what you are saying and as well our own intention. In as far as the outlook of the correspondence is concerned. That might be a way of looking into such. And then on these other matters which have been stated here, I would allow members as well to make their own reflection around such. I think as well, looking into it, it might be necessary that we as well look into what is implied. I think Advocate Motibi emphasized this point when he was dealing with matters of governance. Emphasized a point which we might want to reflect on. There are very critical institutions which are tailored around matters of security. SOEs, if you look into AMSCO, look into DENEL, and a number of other institutions which carry heavy IP into their own operational mandate. And such need high protection as well. When you're going to find some individuals who are part of these boards, who are somewhat exposed into such critical information or might want to have to strengthen such information, who might think at a particular time, let them engage into some investigations one way or the other, there's a serious threat not only into the information of such institutions, but a threat to the country one way or the other of the information that might lie into some of those individuals one way or the other. What is it that we could probably do to safeguard the judicial responsibility of such members who are involved in such institutions as board members. So the point which has been raised by the SIU is a firm point which would need some interrogation, and probably in the way forward you'd want to propose and find way of dealing with such, because I don't know whether it's defined within some delinquent approach or what, but it needs some kind of a valid litmus paper testing to arrive at a point as to how such kind of behavioral instances are found within such institutions. As you say, some of the things are done with good intent, but the good intent and intention must be based on law. Fortunately, South Africa, its own basis, founding principles, is the constitution. So in any constitutional state, the firm foundation is law. In that way, we are bound in whatever form that we must abide by that frame in our own zeal to do right in terms of our own performance. And the members might as well want to probably deal with those kinds of areas in terms of affirming our way forward as to how can we at best find such instances. Honorable Hadebe.
Thank you, Chair. Let me deal with the issue of Brigadier Vega before we come to the way forward. I have said it previously that we should take into consideration what he then highlighted to us previously in terms of his reservation and fears. And if we are still adamant that he ought to appear before us, we can have the meeting as a closed session in order for us to be able to receive whatever information that we think is still outstanding. However, Chair, having said that, one also needs to, as a committee now, we need to ask ourselves whether or not is there any information that is still outstanding that we consider relevant for us to conclude our work. I am of the view, having received the intelligence report update and preliminary findings from the Special Investigation Unit and the Hawks, we are on the right track. There are clear demonstrations in terms of cases before us that there is work underway. My view and my opinion is that we ought to allow the relevant law enforcement agency to continue and finalize the work that they are currently doing once we have final findings and recommendations. We then determine our way forward. As since then, it appears that the SCOPA has done everything within its power, function and mandate to ensure that we do not keep anything under carpet when it comes to ESCOM shenanigans, corruption, manipulation of systems and sabotage. We have done everything within our mandate. We have exhausted everything that ought to have been done by this COVID. We have called all relevant key critical witnesses who have furnished us with information, including the author himself, Mr. Anastasiades. He has appeared because he has assisted us with information. We do have now the intelligence report and the position of both the Fox and the SIU. Let them continue with their work. Let them give us quarterly progress and report until they reach a stage where they say to us, here is the final report. Beyond that, we cannot duplicate things. Let us not endeavor to become law enforcement agents. I not see a need, given what is before our disposal currently, to still pursue preventive appeal. But we need to correct the narrative or the story that was said by the National Commissioner, exactly what the Brigadier Branca is saying. Lastly, I think the Speaker, she has to also assist us as a presiding officer by responding to Brigadier Branca and giving us a way forward on how to deal with this matter. The local standing of this committee is being questioned. We're told we do not have the right or jurisdiction to interact with Brigadier Branca. Whether that is true or not, the legal opinion wants to assist us. And we need to be informed so that we do not act outside our mandate as it's currently being alleged by the Brigadier. We don't want to be seen as interfering with the work of the law enforcement agency. Our job to investigate, we are an oversight body that is entrusted with the responsibility to ensure that public purse is not misused, and any abuse of public purse, we're going to do our oversight duties, and on the issues that need to be referred to the law enforcement agency, those issues will be referred to the relevant authority. And in this case, we need to do exactly that. We have referred this message to the SIU. Let them brief us on a quarterly basis. And once the final report is before us, they are also considering legal opinion. They're still waiting at it. They are not sure on how to proceed until they get such a legal opinion. There are still outstanding issues on their side. So we do not want to rush the issue and then we commit unintended mistakes in the process. That would be my proposal, Chair, to say, I receive an issue. Okay, for now, until such time that we receive those contacts. We'll monitor closely the quarterly report. And I'm not saying we'll have to just give us support. They will come before us on a quarterly basis to present the report. And if they are experiencing challenges in executing that, they will give us a start. We are going to see this matter to its finality. We still have at least a few couple of months to go before the end of the sixth administration. Nature allows no fortune. Whoever comes after our term will also ensure that they pursue this matter. We'll present a close out and a legacy report to ensure that this matter is not swept under the carpet. We are not going to leave any stone unturned in getting to the bottom and the finality of this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Liz. Honourable Liz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think that your proposal is a good one. If this committee had agreed that we would subpoena Brigadier Berger if he refused to come voluntarily, and so I would suggest that your proposal to ask for Parliamentary Legal Office to give us now a legal opinion on our authority to be able to subpoena him and start that process to subpoena him if that's the legal opinion is that we have the authority to do that. It's part of the process that we follow, and I think it needs to be done. There needs clarity. Benedicta was saying is we shouldn't be hiding behind the screen of secrecy or security or that kind of stuff. This is Parliament. This is the people's Parliament. This is where we do things in public. And over my 15 odd years here in this institution, time to time we've had to debate that point. And every time the consequence has been it's public. In my experience, and I know there are some matters which are dealt with in the state security arena, which aren't public, but in every case that I've been involved in, the ruling has been that it must be made public. There hasn't ever, in those instances, and I haven't been involved in any cases, been a secret or a closed would support your proposal. Let's go down that route. Let's get the legal opinion. A, can we subpoena? And in terms of not only the legal position of Parliament to subpoena, if that's the right word, I don't think subpoena is, but the equivalent for Parliament, and can SCOPA do that in this instance? Is it within our mandate? As Honourable Peggy has just been saying, is that there's, you know, that where is our mandate and where isn't it? So there are two issues that we need a legal opinion on. First of all, can Parliament subpoena Brigadier Burgat into the bigger picture of secrecy and security? And secondly, within Parliament, are we authorised as SCOPA to do it? And then, Mr. Chairman, can I add on to your proposal, the proposal earlier that we get a legal opinion about ensuring that our questions are answered, even when it comes to the naming of people. I think that that's important, not only in this instance, but for future such situations. So that's in terms of the Burger position, I think we can find common ground there. In terms of whether this committee should proceed or not proceed with the Eskom matters in the broader picture, I don't think there's any question that we have to proceed because that's part of our job. The question really is specifically, I think, Honourable Peggy is saying, what about the so-called violence or whatever report you want to call it? Do we continue to interrogate that report as regards to Eskom? And perhaps not, but the contents of that report, the malfeasance, financial issues in that report, which the SIU are already well advanced on, we can't just stop doing that. So there's a bit of nuance here about, no, we're not going to perhaps talk about the report, but the content that we're dealing with in terms of our mandate at SCOPA, we don't have any option but to proceed with that. So there's some nuance here, and there's some, you know, there is some content. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, there's some form of a mixture in progress and finding a way of saying those who have legal grounds to deal with those matters must be handled in that form. I think where Honourable Hadebe is coming from is the point which says, which we must be very grateful about, that SCOPA has got into a route. Probably you write a letter to us and then you come to us and make a way forward for us. Is that fair? Yeah. You see what I think we can take from this process is that we have one proper terminology. We've somewhat began to encourage people to do what they have done currently. Something which we can say proudly that we've been able to say through this whole process, SIU here are the matters, DPCI here are the matters, SAPS here are the matters. Please run with these kind of matters. So we have come back with the report which says, here we are, here is our movement towards those areas. We are satisfied that we're picking up on these issues this way or that way. I think we must appreciate that kind coming from us, that at least we have made that contribution. And here are these legal entities which are carrying in these kinds of areas that we have identified. But what is left from us, we'll have our own meeting. We'll have our own meeting, we'll compile the report, and then we'll assess that report, and based on that report, we'll have that closure in terms of which areas are closed, which areas are opened, and then they stipulate such and table that report to Parliament. But clearly, the SIU, DPCI, towards that movement, they are substantive areas of action, which we must appreciate, and we accept that that work has been done quite proficiently, and we encourage them to continue at doing so, because we are not in their shoes. We are parliamentarians. As parliamentarians, we can't venture into the detail intricacies of what they are that someone's doing. You see, and the question which Honorable Les is venturing into is that the question of names which ought to be dropped during a reporting time, which we must probably narrow it in a way, not to get into the general instance of questions being answered. The issue now is names. It's not necessarily the general answering. You see, specifically, whether names could be probably the part of those reports. There have been no refusal to report, but the point has been that can names be part of such reports, yes or no, and how can those be there? It's not, as I understand it, it's not that names only, while you are investigating. While you are investigating, can you throw names of people investigated, that so-and-so is being investigated, so-and-so is being investigated, and so forth? What implications does that carry? So I think that's what he says. We need probably to get some kind of legal opinion on, you know, so I think for certainty, just to concede into that point. So we're happily moving forward with this matter. The Berger matter, Brigadier Berger matter, is going on for legal scrutiny, and we're going to be advised how to deal, how to handle it. But what is clear is that we're not going to leave the Berger matter. You see, because it's coming in as something to run away from any point of level of scrutiny. And we're not going to leave that. That's why I would want to have an indication whether, if he comes, he should go to whatever platform, but he must come. You see, so Parliament must hold him accountable because he has been cited as being party to a certain action. So we can't leave that unattended. I think we agree, all of us. So we need that kind of the advice on the matter. Is he still with the SAPS?
He's on pension.
Oh, he's on pension.
Yes.
You might hear that he's been employed somewhere else. There's that possibility as well. These people who are following this thing, employed somewhere else. You see. So okay, fine. I think I will give it that to you. Yeah. We'll deal with it in whatever form, because in law there are avenues that could be somewhat pursued. So it's no longer part of your command. It doesn't remain part of your command. It's in pension. Okay. No. Fine. I think colleagues, let's accept that we have through diligent exercise, dealt with the matters, and in the committee meeting which ought to be convened for the committee to close areas of our own actions on the matters will be able to do so. But let's thank the SIU, thank the SAPS and thank the PCI for the work done so far. We wish them one back. Are you aware, General?
End of June.
End of June. Okay, end of June. End of June. We'll check the correspondence he has sent to the speaker, how has been captured, whether it's still brigadier, blah, 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 and all the stuff in terms of his response. Thank you very much to yourselves and your ministries on such your cooperation in this piece of work is well appreciated. There are punches thrown, but not physical punches thrown. We just with the interests of justice, you know. So we really appreciate you when we say we have this kind of a meeting. You haven't failed to do so. Thank you very much for such. And as a committee, we still have work to do around start to solidify what Honourable Hadebe has proposed and somewhat agreed, so that we can firmly write a report to Parliament on such instances. The meeting is closed. When Honourable Shengwa, the chairman, comes back, we'll give him a report that this thing has been closed. Yeah. Thank you very much. We'll happily report to him as such. Thank you. The meeting adjourns. Thank you. Indivimbe ubuze imibuzo apha nindihlalisa apha etafile apha esitulo tyhu indivimbe ubuze imibuzo
Are you reporting for radio or